Well, hello, runners. Welcome to episode 25 of the Iron Things podcast, the podcast for the everyday runner in search for that extra bit of motivation to get out there. My name's Susie, and I am your host. In today's episode, we chat with Fitz Kohler from fitznets.com. This is a bonus show that I am very excited to bring you this week as an extra episode. Fitz Kohler is a staple in the best and largest races in America. If you have run LA Marathon or Philadelphia Marathon or any of the DC races, chances are you have seen her at the start and finish lines. Last year, she was diagnosed with breast cancer after getting a clean bill of health just 7 weeks prior. She had to go through several rounds of aggressive chemo as well as a few surgeries. However, she continued with all her commitments and showed up to each and every race with a smile on her face to cheer on us runners, even as her hair was falling and she was feeling violently ill. She comes to the show today 100% cancer-free to talk about this journey and about her book, My Very Noisy Comeback. Her book is a memoir that will be very relatable to all of us because it is a story of grit, resiliency, and kindness. Kindness to all of us, but also to herself. So, without further ado, let's play the interview with Fitz. Hi, Fitz. How are you?
I'm great, Susie. Super happy to be here.
I am so happy to have you as well. It's an honor for me to be able to interview you because I know that you've been very busy, really marketing your book. And I really have a lot of questions for you. Yeah, let's start at the beginning. Why don't you introduce yourself?
So the first thing I am, and deep down in my soul, is I'm a fitness expert. I've been teaching fitness for decades. I have a master's in exercise and sports sciences, and I work to help people live better and longer by making fitness understandable, attainable, and fun. I'm a gimmick-free, no-nonsense girl. I will never plug a diet, pill, powder, supplement, shake, wrap, any of the snake oil. I am opposed to, aggressively opposed to, and I champion healthy habits that help people, you know, feel great in their skin and perform better as an athlete. And I love doing that. I own one of the largest school running programs in the country called the Morning Mile. It's a before school walking running program. It's the only one that invites every child every day, plus their faculty and family. So that's in about 400 plus schools. I'm very proud. That's morningmile.com if anyone wants to check that out and get their kids moving in the mornings. And then last but not least, which I know you're very interested in, and it's a very interesting thing, is I'm a professional race announcer. So I hold court at the start and finish lines of running events, you know, welcome the athletes as they arrive, make sure they're engaged, informed, and entertained. I think we have a hell of a lot of fun. Some race announcers just kind of read a script, and that's fine. I like to get involved with my athletes and make sure all of them feel like a community and that they're part of a team before I whip them into a frenzy and yell go. And then I head over to the finish line and I welcome them each, often by name. And I just love it. I love the running community. I think the running community makes me better. I think the running community, I don't think I know the running community was part of my cure as I was going through my very evil and difficult cancer treatments. And I'm so grateful for it because it meant a lot to me. It certainly meant a lot to my survival, and it brings me immense joy. So that's who I am. That's what I do.
Right. So there's a lot that just right here, I'm getting excited. Sure. So how did you get to be a race announcer? Is that something that you wanted to do as you were like starting with your own business?
It's interesting. My company's evolved, or my profession has evolved over the years. I started out many years ago teaching group fitness classes in a gym, and I haven't taught in a gym in 20 plus years, but I transitioned from classes in the gym. I taught overseas for a while. I taught on television, and that's where I fell in love with mass media because it allowed me to reach and help strangers. And so as my career has evolved, one of the most powerful and important things I do is get on national news in the morning and teach to 5 million people. You know, it's I love teaching to any amount of people, but I want mass impact. I love Jack LaLanne, the old guy from the 50s who, you know, he was a household name that really impacted lots of people. And I don't want to just help a small amount. I want to help a lot of people. So television, radio, books, magazines, all of those things are powerful tools. They're weapons against poor health. And I am the tool within that. I am, you know, I'm a sledgehammer a little bit about fitness, trying to get people to get fit. But yeah, so I've been a professional speaker. I speak for corporations. I've worked for Disney, Oakley, Office Depot, Tropicana, you name it. I've worked for tons of Fortune 500 companies as either a speaker or a spokesperson and a sport performance expert. And then I was teaching strength training for runners clinics at Walt Disney World on a regular basis whenever they had events. And their race announcer, Rudy Novotny, who, and many, I see the smile on your face. Everybody knows Rudy. Everybody loves Rudy. Rudy was introducing me as I taught my clinics, and he kept going, wow, you're such a great presenter. You're such a great presenter. You're the only person here who's an actual professional speaker. We have people who talk, but you're the only one in it. And he kept harping on that. And finally, I said, well, thank you, but I don't know what to do with that information anymore. But I certainly appreciated his praise. And he goes, you know what? I have a race weekend in California, the OC Marathon coming up, and I need a co-host, a co-announcer. Are you interested? And I said, well, I've never done it before, but I'd love to give it a try. And so he connected me with race director Gary Kutcher, who we instantly hit it off. And I'm so grateful Gary gave me that chance because it did fit like a glove. Rudy talks in the, he wrote the foreword of my book, and he talks about turning the microphone over to me. At one point there was 20,000 people and he had to leave the stage. I was like, here you go. And I took about a two second pause thinking, all right, let's see how this works.
They jump in the pool.
There we go. And it was great. We had a blast. And I think it was within an hour, Gary came over and said, you're awesome. Can you come back next year? And then more race announcing opportunities kept coming. And I do believe that I have the absolute best schedule out of all the race announcers in the country. I think I have the best accumulation of events that are mine. And I just love what I do. It's so fun. It's so fun. So right. Grateful for.
On the day of, this is something I'm really curious, you know, to hear from you. What happens on the day of a race? Do you have to be there like super early and stay till the last runner crosses the finish line?
That's exactly right. Now, I'll start by saying I may show up if an event starts at 6, I'll show up an hour and a half before because I like to be there early. I like to make sure the sound is right, my stage is set up properly, blah, blah, blah. The other race professionals, the operations folks, they didn't even sleep at night. They've been working all night. So I never complain because I know those folks are working way harder, or at least have a schedule that's far worse. But yeah, I get there at the crack of dawn. But interestingly enough, you would think you'd be miserable when your alarm clock goes off at 3:30, but on race day, the alarm clock says, hooray, it's here, wake up. You get to go do the thing you love with the people you're crazy about. So yeah, I get up early and it's an adrenaline fueled profession. So the second I get on my stage and the runners start showing up, it's a blast. I love every second of it. And while I completely respect the speedsters up in front, and boy, do I ever, my passion is the back of the pack. I love the slow folks, the gritty folks, the ones who had to give every ounce to get to that finish line. And so my goal is to make sure every single person who ran the race feels like they won the race. And the people at the back, I want them to feel so good about their experience that they desperately want to come back again. Important role. It's interesting within the running community, not every race director understands the value of a professional race announcer. Maybe they get a guy from the news or they get a DJ. Someone who's just not afraid to be on the microphone, and that's fine. But I think it really matters to have a professional who not only can handle a microphone, but someone who has run the race. You know, I know what it's like to hit the wall. I know what it's like to have everything go wrong at mile 6 and your hip and your knee and all the blisters. And, you know, I think I truly think it matters to be able to identify with your athletes and have compassion for them. And again, be able to host that party So some races just have some guy at the start with the horn and go honk, and the runners leave. I think they're missing the bus on that, because, you know, a race isn't just a race for most people now. It's an experience, and a professional announcer right. goes along to make that happen.
Yeah. And not only at the start line, also at the finish line. It can make or break your experience. I mean, you, if you have a good race announcer, you cross that finish line and you feel like a million bucks. If they say That's your it. Name, you feel like a million bucks. It's like, oh my God. Like,
because what if they pronounce it correctly, even better.
So let's talk about your diagnosis.
I can say that all cancer cases, even within the scope of breast cancer, so different, very individual, right. almost like a thumbprint or a snowflake. Right. Everybody has their own thing. However, I, as a fitness professional, I've always used annual exams and early detection as a part of my platform, trying to get everybody to do the thing. And I walk the walk. I go every year to get the skin check and the eyes checked and the pap smear and the mammogram. And, you know, my attitude was, if there's ever one cancer cell in my body, I want to find it. And I want to crush it right away. So in December of 2018, I went in for my annual mammogram and I left with a clean bill of health. Less than 7 weeks later, standing in a hotel bathroom naked at Disney World, I did this. I went right here and I rubbed my underboob and I felt it. And it was undeniably wrong. It should not have been there. Some women say, oh, I just have dense breasts and I don't know. I knew this thing did not belong there. It felt like a bean or a peanut. It was hard and it was strange. And so this is where I made a firm decision that saved my life. Less than 7 weeks after that clean mammogram, I found it and I didn't call my mom. I didn't call my friends and say, what do I do? I didn't Google it. I picked up the damn phone and I called my gynecologist within 30 seconds of finding that lump. I said, hey, I found a lump. They said, can you come in today? And I said, I can. I'm out at a race weekend. Can I come in Monday? And they saw me Monday. Thursday, I had the mammogram ultrasound, and I hadn't even told anybody by then. I just was like, oh, well, I don't cry over milk that hasn't spilled yet. It's a pretty strict policy that worked for me. So I went in, and the radiologist, she said, yeah, I do see that lump, and it's concerning, but you also have three swollen, hard lymph nodes. And with that, I just lost it. And I definitely thought, I am certainly dying. And being a fitness expert, one of the healthiest girls around, I've got two beautiful kids who are teenagers. And I just thought, oh my God, I am definitely dying. And I would make the perfect tragic tale because of all the good stuff surrounding me. And I did not want to be the perfect tragic tale. So things moved rapidly. They took it very seriously, since the cancer was growing, spreading quickly. And I saw a surgeon that day, had a biopsy the next morning. The next week, I had a bunch of scans. I had a port put in. And then I think between finding the lump and starting chemo was less than 3 weeks. So my life just went boom, turned upside down. But here's the deal. I was cocky and I was stupid. And from the get-go, I decided I am not missing out any of my children's special events. And I am not missing out on any of my races. And as a runner, you understand having a race weekend is almost like where people get excited about prom. You know, I get prom 30 weekends of the year. I love my running events and I earn my right on those, I earn my spot on those stages. And I just wasn't giving up the joy that those races brought me. So even before I started treatment, I said, I am not giving up my races. And my doctor, thankfully, I got the A team here in Gainesville, Florida, but they never once told me to stay home. I think they also knew they couldn't have controlled me that way. But instead, they encouraged me to live. And even when I started getting violently ill from cancer, from chemo, which I did, my doctor never said, stay home. He said, okay, we have to get you on your feet. And so we took a bunch of interesting tactics to do that. And, you know, as I was diagnosed, I would have preferred to keep it private and not tell anybody, but I knew that I was going to go from 2 feet of long blonde hair to standing on stages bald. And I figured people would ask questions. So I made it a little video. I published it on my fitness pages on fitness.com and on my fitness page on Facebook and so forth. And those videos are still there, but it's called I Have Breast Cancer. And, but I decided also, I wasn't going to tell anybody when it got hard. I just, you know, my business is about health and happiness, and telling everybody I was sick or sad or whatever, wasn't going to help them. I didn't want pity. I'm averse to pity. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to tell everybody it's great no matter what. And so no matter what, I said, it's great. It's fine. I'm doing fantastic. And, I detail all of the truth in the book, but one of the most interesting things is I have chemo, I get really violently ill, we start the IV fluids, just so I tell my doctor, I say, I'm announcing the LA Marathon this weekend, my biggest event of the year. He goes, well, we got to get you on your feet. So right. We do it, and I arrive in Los Angeles with my hairs falling out, and it was the morning of the marathon where it just started coming out in clumps. It was a nightmare. And I recorded a little video, and I certainly didn't release it back then. I just recently released it. But yeah, I lost a bulk of my hair on my stage at the finish line of the Los Angeles Marathon. And one of the craziest experiences of my life. And I'm so grateful it happened that way, because even though I did a lot of crying, I wear my sunglasses all day so nobody could see the tears. And poor Rudy did a ton to work hard to be a good friend. But if I wasn't actively on the microphone talking, I was sobbing, and our whole stage was just covered. It was a black stage covered with blonde hair. But the second I got on the microphone, I actually had real joy and I felt genuine enthusiasm. And it was not only a distraction, it was the only way to stop my heart from breaking completely right. in a million pieces that day, was to be with you guys. So yeah. Cancer. It wasn't a lot of fun. I had 21 rounds of chemo, 33 rounds of radiation, several surgeries. And, you know, I talk about all the ups and downs of treatment and how it intertwined with race announcing and travel. And it was interesting.
Were you able to fulfill all your commitments?
Absolutely.
Or was there anything that didn't happen because you were like,
you know what? There was one day, it was after my final of the very mean chemo, that the first six I had were vicious. And I was, my last race before I had about a 3 week break was in Denver, Colorado at a DC Wonder Woman run event. And I'm a Floridian. So we're up at a mile high, which I'm no good in elevation. And then it was 100 degrees. And yeah, that was a weekend where I had two close calls. So towards the end of the expo day, the day before the races, I asked my race director, I said, do you mind if I leave a little early? And she said, leave right now, get home or get to the hotel and rest up so we have you on race day. And so I walked, it was just a couple blocks back to my hotel, but I buckled over half a dozen times to get sick. I thought, you know, the world was spinning. And I remember just sitting in the hotel room in the shower, sitting on the floor of the shower with the water just trying to cool off. And then the next morning on my start line stage, I almost hit the ground. I almost passed out there. But other than that, I did it all. And no matter how bad I felt, I would step on my stage and it was as though someone hit my on switch, went here, right. You get to be polar again. And, you know, runner fueled go-go juice. You guys filled me with adrenaline and I got to be me for 4 hours, 8 hours, whatever it was. I certainly paid the price for that work on occasion after the fact, but I wouldn't go back and trade any of it. I wouldn't go back and trade any of it for some extra rest. No way. It was good. Right.
So who was in your corner? Did you have the support of, when you have to go through something like this, your whole world, I imagine, you know, gets, because you have to go to a doctor, you have a family, like who was in your corral with you, like supporting you?
So my family was incredible. My husband, Rob, took me to all of the appointments. There was a few that I went to independently, but you know, when they pump you full of those drugs and really they pump me full of Benadryl, which made me tired and loopy. So I wasn't a safe driver. So my family was very supportive and friends delivered meals and drove my kids to and from school. And, you know, even now people say, how do we help? how do we help our friends with breast cancer, right? Or any type of cancer? I get asked that a lot. And sometimes I'm stuck. You know, people send me tons of cards, tons of gifts. I have a handmade blanket, which I still cuddle. I wrap myself in every day. People send shirts and water bottles and all sorts of lovely, lovely gifts. The things that were lifesavers for me was providing my kids safe rides and the food, you know, because when you're sick, cooking is not a, you know, a thing, or grocery shopping was not a thing, right? I wanted to do. And I did have friends drive me to and from appointments sometimes. And what else? Oh, a house cleaning service donated a couple of cleanings, which went a long way. And then, of course, when I was away at a race weekend, I had race directors that I'd call in advance and say, hey, listen, I'm still coming. I'm going to be fine, but can you arrange for me to have IV fluids while I'm there? And so now this poor race director who is busy, you know, laying out a course and doing all the other things, now he has to find a way to get his race announcer IV fluids. And they did. I got off many planes and went straight to IV fluids in my hotel room at one of these hydration salons, which I still think are wonderful and super weird. But yeah, it definitely doing cancer the way I chose to do it, it definitely required a village. And I am so grateful for it because it was hard. It was super hard.
Right. And in terms of how long did it go from the time that you were diagnosed till you had a clean bill of health?
So I started chemo in February of 2019, and my final chemo was May 11th of 2020. So it was 15 months. Right. It was really long, 15 months. On occasion, people would be like, oh, it's going to fly by. It didn't fly by.
I'm sure it was long. Yeah. So, and then how does that, once you, did you know, like, I don't know. Do you know as you go along through the chemo that your cancer is receding, that the outcome, you know, like that you're going to reach, you know, that positive news at some point in the near future? Do you have any suggestion that's going to happen?
That's a good question. So one of the first telltale signs I had that the cancer was shrinking was after my very first round of chemo. It was as I went in for round number two, I asked my doctor, I said, so when does this thing start shrinking? He said, can you feel it? And I reached back under and I could not feel the lump anymore. It had already shrunk. So I got really enthusiastic thinking, wow, we are obliterating this cancer. It's going to be zero. It's just going to be gone within a month. And I was wrong. And they did scans. They did a variety of scans going through the process, ultrasounds, et cetera, and MRIs and things. But when I had surgery and the doctor removed the tumor and the lymph nodes, then he was able to tell that yes, the cancer was still alive. We still had some cancer cells, but we got clean margins. And so it was surgery day that apparently I became in remission. And they didn't even tell me that. I had surgery. They removed all the cancer that still existed. And it was maybe a month later where I said, hey, when am I declared in remission? They said, oh, back when you had surgery. Because
oh, wow.
now we have no evidence of disease. And so even though they removed the cancer on July 30th, 2019, they kept me on chemo every 3 weeks for another, I don't know, till May, 10 months, because that chemo was, they called it a sharpshooter. So if any cells were floating around my body trying to get into my brain or my lungs or my liver, that chemo would find it and kill it. So yeah, they did a lot of regular scanning to see if things had spread or shrunk or grew. And fortunately mine was continuously good news.
So what did you do when you got the news, when they told you you're clean, like you're good?
So when I was told a month after surgery that I was technically in remission, it's interesting because, you know, it's really hard to believe that you have cancer. You know, you get this diagnosis and you can't wrap your head around the fact that I have cancer. And then when I was told I was cancer free, I also found that very hard to believe. So I didn't call all my friends or family and say, hey, guess what? Cancer free. I never got on Facebook and said cancer free. I waited because I was going to continue having scans to investigate. And I waited till my final chemo, and it had been 10 months and they still didn't have, they couldn't find any cancer in me, that I finally felt like, okay, I'm done and I'm really cancer free. And I get to breathe easy. I just had an ultrasound and mammogram a few weeks ago, and that was clean again. So they'll continue to follow up, and they're relieving. It's interesting. I don't go into these scans feeling super nervous, but when I come out of them, I'm super relieved. It's interesting how your body responds even when you don't think your mind is going those places. Apparently it does.
Right. So were you able to exercise at all, even minimally, when you were going through chemo?
Yeah. So in my book, at the end of every chapter, and each chapter is a different month, I put it, it's called fitness logs. So I figure since I'm a fitness expert going through this, people would want to know. And so I detail my workouts, but it's almost cute. At the beginning, I thought, all right, well, I'll have chemo on Monday and I'll take a few days off and then I'll get back in the gym and just do something moderate. I had chemo Monday, and then on Thursday, life hit the fan, or my stomach hit the fan, and I didn't get back into the gym for 10, 12 days. So first couple of rounds of chemo, on the third week after chemo, I was able to do some moderate exercise. And then after, I think, the third round of chemo, I was completely done with exercise. I couldn't do anything at all. I couldn't even walk to my mailbox. I was in bad shape. But once I got done with the mean chemo and moved to the less toxic chemo, I started gradually getting back into it again. And it was very gradual. I started off stretching in the pool. Just stretching in the pool, that was a big deal for me, but it was something. And then I started moving in the pool. I swam a little bit in the pool. Eventually, I got back in the gym to do strength training. And I was doing a severely modified version of what I used to do. But that was okay. I was thrilled. Putting me back in a gym was like throwing a fish back into water. So I was excited to be there. And, you know, nobody else knew what I used to lift. Nobody was looking at my weight stack to see how much I was lifting. So I was never embarrassed that I was less than I used to be or less than anyone else in the gym. I just felt very proud and grateful to be in the gym. And that's one thing I want other people to take is, doesn't matter what you're doing specifically, just as long as you're doing your best and moving forward, you're winning. That's what fitness is all about. It's a personal endeavor. It has nothing to do with anybody else.
Right. And now what does the future look like? Now we are in the middle of a pandemic, so this is not a good time for race announcing. Although some races are coming back, but.
Yeah, thank goodness. Yeah, I've lost 35 events, which is heartbreaking because I look forward to every one of them. However, many of my race directors are right now cautiously scheduling full speed ahead for 2021. And I really hope they all come back because I miss them so much. And then, you know, when I was writing the book, I started writing it last year in the middle of my mean chemo, but then I was only writing on airplanes because that's the only time I had quiet time sitting down. So the second the world shut down and my first event was canceled, I sat in my hammock chair on the back porch and started writing. And so this is what's occupying all of my time. It's called My Noisy Cancer Comeback, Running at the Mouth While Running for My Life. And it's a memoir covering my 15-month cancer battle. Cancer is pretty interesting on its own, but when I combined it with announcing 22 major race weekends, things got hairy and hilarious and interesting. So yeah, I hope everyone gets this book because it's pretty fun. It was a lot of hard work, and it was, I would say hundreds of hours of effort, but I want people to know there's pictures because people like a book with lots of pictures. But yeah, I've used the pandemic, the shutdown wisely and productively. And so, you know, the book's official release date is October 20th. However, Those people who buy my book on fitness.com, which is my website. So if you go to Amazon, fine. I totally get that. We're in, I'm selling it hardback, paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And so all of the major book retailers will carry this book. Amazon, all the retailers, they take 55%. So two things. I'm hoping people come to fitness.com for that. Also, anyone who buys the book at fitness.com will get an autograph. I'll sign the book, and I have a special gift with purchase. And one of my chapters, all my chapters are really fun. I'm going to give you a little taste, but chapter 3 is called Nostril Wigs and Hot Pants. Chapter 4, I Can Do Hard Things. Chapter 11, Mascots and Mosh Pits. So, you know, the book, even though it's a dark subject, I hit it in a really fun way, I think. But chapter 4 is I Can Do Hard Things. And when I was going through it, you know, some of my days and my moments were terrifying. And you start talking to yourself, right? You have to motivate yourself to go back for chemo number 6 or go into the scary scanning machine. So I would tell myself, I can do hard things. You know, I was reminding myself of the back in the day when I used to be a competitive kickboxer, or when I, you know, raising good children is hard. And, you know, perhaps the rest of my business is perceived as hard, and I'm good at hard things. So that's what I would tell myself. And so the chapter is called I Can Do Hard Things. And so I made up these stickers, and they say, I can do hard things. And just a little reminder for other people that are struggling with anything, you put the sticker on the back of your phone or on your dashboard, or on your fridge, whatever. And so if you go to fitness.com, you get a signed book and you get your gift with purchase, and they're all being wrapped in really fun mailers. And I just want everyone to feel how much I love and appreciate them when they show up in the mail.
Right. What's your next? Do you have your first race on the calendar?
So I can say that
you can share. I don't know if you're sharing something that's like,
I would shout it from the rooftops. I have 2 events this year that have still not been canceled. So November 21st is the Savannah Women's Half Marathon and 5K. December 5th is the Savannah Bridge Run. That's a 5K, 10K, or you can do both races. They're still trying to get their permits and waiting on word from the mayor. So the good news in Savannah is that it's a red state, and their governor is pro-business and really wants things to get their citizens to get back to business. Savannah is a blue town where they're a lot more cautious. And so, you know, there's a very clear divide between, you know, Florida and California, the way things operate. So desperately hoping Savannah takes place. And I know my role will be important because I'm going to have to be the one on the microphone telling people, hey, back up, social distance. And, you know, I'll be able to boss people around, tell them what to do and make them feel good about doing it. So I'm really hopeful for that. And, you know, I'm going to post my 2021 schedule online as I normally do, and, you know, go to bed each night hoping that all of my events take place.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
I wish you all the best, and I'm going to be looking for you in my next race. Do you ever come to the Northeast, Philadelphia, New York?
I announced the Philadelphia Marathon now. I started that in 2019, which was a blast.
I ran it in 2018. I can't believe this.
Yeah, we had a blast. And what I was told is 2019 was a lot more fun than it had been in the past. And that's actually the November chapter is called Mascots and Mosh Pit. The mosh pit was Philadelphia because I was able to get all of the runners. We had 13,000 people jumping at the start. It was mind-blowing fun. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to Philadelphia. I announced the Buffalo Marathon every Memorial Day, which is such a spectacular event, very patriotic and enthusiastic crowd, great course, wonderful race organization. And then the DC Wonder Woman and Batman Run series will be making its way into the Northeast this year. So yeah,
you'll find. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I will, if I, you know, like I'll pay attention. I'll
Please
check
do.
Your, yeah. Also, you know, I'll try and sign up for something where you're going to be announcing, because I would love to meet you in person.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll keep an eye out for you. And when I have one of my friends coming through the finish, I run down from my stage and I run them through the finish line. So we could do that together.
That would be awesome. And I'm going to go buy your book now so you can, I'll go to your website. Yeah, you can sign it for me.
I would love to. I will say lots of nice things.
You look so badass on the cover.
Like, do you like it?
I love it. I think it's awesome.
Let me see. I'm going to tell you a really funny story. So I wanted a photo from an actual race. And I have a million race photos, as you can imagine. However, I thought since I had gone through cancer treatment, it would be great to get a bald photo for the cover, right? However, I had some good pics, yet they were too grainy. They weren't sharp enough to be high enough quality for the book cover. So then I thought, all right, I'll take a picture at some of my races. I started in Los Angeles on March 8th. And even though the photographer took a beautiful photo, I looked so sick. I had lost so much weight. I just looked like a really ugly person. To me, not a reflection I would want to put on the cover. I was chemo sick. So those pictures were no good. And I thought, all right, I'll try it again next week. But next week never happened because that's when the world shut down. So I, just a few months ago, had one of my favorite photographers come over. I have a studio built in my home to take pictures. And I thought, I'll do the microphone and the cowbell and a smile. So I take these photos and I send it off to my cover designer. And all the work in here is all professional. Professional editor, proofreader, layout, cover designer. And so I send the photo we chose in the studio over to the cover designer, and he's Croatian. And while he speaks fabulous English, he doesn't have the social nuances where no judgment comes in. So I send him the photo and I tell him I want a pink background, and he responds and he says, hey, I've been working on the cover and I just don't love it. And I said, well, do you not like the photo or do you not like my color scheme? He goes, can I be honest with you as your best friend? And I was like, okay, you can be honest with my best friend. And he goes, you look repulsive in that photo. And I said, what? And he goes, you look repulsive and your eyes look demonic. And I died. And you know, the backstory is I looked at this photo and I didn't love it. I didn't love the photo. I felt a little uncomfortable with it. My makeup was a little too heavy and the whole thing was just, it just didn't feel like me. But all the people I was showing the photo saying, what do you think? They're, oh, your makeup's perfect. You look great. And I didn't feel comfortable with it. And so when he said, you look repulsive, I thought, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for that really strong opinion, because obviously I can't use a photo that someone has deemed repulsive. So we went out and shot it again. My friend, Rebecca Herrera, she's a professional photographer. And, you know what? It's interesting. I mean, I have this hairdo. I don't love this hair, but I do love having hair. You know, it's you learn a new type of gratefulness. So do I love this hair? I don't love the hair, but it's way better than bald. And so perspective is one of the things I harp on within these pages. And I hope that I can continue to find the fun and the happy in life. I always did before, but I feel even more strongly about it now. And, you know, there's a lot of running information in here or behind the scenes race information, right? It's the juicy details. People wonder, like, what's it like to be a race announcer or to work in the running industry? The juicy stuff is in here on that part. So I would say 50% of my target market is the running community. However, you know, when people get diagnosed with something horrible, they start looking for two things: information and hope. And this book is packed with it. And if you know, even within breast cancer, if you search breast cancer in Amazon, all of those books or most of them look really scary and dreary and stressful. And I'm hoping that, I think any other person who's been through any sort of cancer care at all, I mean, cancer has many universal things, whether it's your boob or your booty or your skin or your brain. There's a lot of universal experiences. So I think cancer survivors will get a kick out of this and have a good laugh. And then anyone who's newly diagnosed, I think they'll read this book and they'll know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And as long as they just keep going and keep doing the things that help them truly live during the process, that they're going to be okay. So I'm excited to get it in your hands and everybody else's.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Thank you, Susie.
I'll go get your book right now, and people go get her book too. I'll put the links below so people can just click on your website and purchase the book. And thank you so much for this.
Of course. And anyone out there, if you're on social media, I'm at Fitness everywhere on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Reach out, because I love to communicate with our runners. And then when you show up at one of my races, I can pour extra love on you.
Thank you so much, Fitz. It's been a pleasure.
You got it. Bye, team.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Fit Scholar. Don't forget to visit the I Run Things community on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And please come back to listen to more episodes. And as always, run fearless, you guys. Ciao.